From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most important issues facing you and your families, and it is all from a biblical worldview. So for the next hour, we're going to navigate the conflicts and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and most of all, a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
Sadly, Columbia's administrators have chosen to let the threats, the fear, and the intimidation of the mob rule to overtake American principles like free speech and the free exchange of ideas and the free exercise of religion. They have co-opted First Amendment arguments to protect genocide and to elevate the voices of anti-Semitism.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson on the campus of Columbia University just moments ago. I spoke with the speaker about the rise in anti-Semitism on college campuses earlier today. We're going to talk about that here on this edition of Washington Watch. And speaking of fueling anti-Semitism,
we reject the policy and the practice of Netanyahu. Terrible. What could be worse than what he has done in response? First of all, the exposure. See, his intelligence person resigned. He should resign.
If you were truly standing with Israel, you would be standing with Israel's democratically elected government. That was former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Look, this is a disgrace. We're going to talk about this with former Congresswoman and now Dean of the Regent School of Government, Michelle Bachmann, in just a moment. And the cancel culture is bankrupt of an understanding of America's founding values. That's why 15 state attorneys general have weighed in on the latest manifestation of the cancel culture, debanking. Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach joins me to explain why he spearheaded a recent letter to the second largest bank in the U.S., Bank of America. And earlier this afternoon, the Arizona House of Representatives advanced a bill that would repeal a pro-life law that the state Supreme Court recently brought back to life. Now, the repeal measure only passed after multiple attempts and after three Republicans crossed over to join with all the Democrats in the House. I'm going to be joined by the Speaker of the Arizona House, Ben Thoma, later on Washington Watch. And finally, we're coming down to the wire on the World Health Organization as they will meet a month from now on their pandemic accord, which is nothing less than a global power grab.
If we fail to conclude these processes now, it's only going to become more difficult to negotiate strong amendments to the IHR and the strong pandemic agreement in future. Because as humans, when the pain is off, we tend to forget.
That was the head of the WHO, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, on Monday. Well, there's a way you can put a little pain on the Biden administration so they won't forget what this is all about. It's about national sovereignty. We're going to get the latest from Jim Roguski later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. Be sure and check it out. Well, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstrations continue to inflame tensions at college campuses throughout the country, most notably at Columbia University, where police arrested more than 100 protesters this week. Now the Ivy League University has implemented a hybrid classroom schedule for the remainder of the semester to support safety concerns for their Jewish students. House Speaker Mike Johnson traveled to the Upper East Side of New York City today, where he spoke with Jewish students at Columbia and held a press conference where he called for the university president to resign for her yielding to the dangerous mob rule on the college campus. Can more be done to protect the safety of Jewish students at Columbia and other universities? And what does this tell us about the state of America? Joining me now to discuss this is former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She served on the House Intelligence Committee during her time in Congress. She is now the dean of the Robertson School of Government at Regent University and chair of FRC's Board of Directors. She is also co-chair of the Jerusalem Prayer Breakfast. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, welcome back to the program. Always great to see you.
Thanks again, Tony. Always a pleasure to be with you.
So give us your reaction to this escalating rise of anti-Semitism on college campuses across the country and how these protests have turned violent in the last several days.
Well, it's way out of the norm. This is not normal protest anymore. This approach is something that I think you could call a mass psychosis. Literally, in a matter of a couple weeks' time, we went from having young students being led by actually a lot of foreign students. About 40% of the people who are protesting come from foreign nations. They came from the river to the sea to now quite literally on these campuses, they're calling for violence. They're calling for violence by calling for people to become martyrs, martyrs for the cause. What? Martyrs like the Arab Palestinians were martyrs on October 7th. But then they're calling continually, their chants are death to Israel, death to the United States. And at Yale, they pulled down the American flag. Students are holding up signs with arrows pointing at Jewish students saying that this will be next. This needs to be the next target for destruction. So now we've moved away from free speech. We're not in the realm of free speech anymore. I remember from my law school days in constitutional law, you can protest an action or a policy, but once you've crossed the line into calling for violence, then it's over. And we're at that point, Tony, at Harvard, at Yale, at Columbia, at Cal Poly and Humboldt, in college after college. Now it's moved into violence, especially with the erection of these campuses, of these encampments of tents, pup tents that are popping up. And so now the protesters are taking over the physical property and the land. In fact, at Cal Poly in Northern California, they've taken over buildings. So now a line is crossed. This reminds us of 1968 and the anti-war protesters. They were violent, violent extremists. They called for the violent overthrow of the United States government. We're seeing calls for the overthrow of the United States government when they call for death to America, death to Israel. So at this point, action needs to be taken. The control needs to be brought back into those who run the universities. So they need to revoke the student visas of those who are foreign students who are calling for the overthrow of the United States and for death to Israel. Because now we're seeing Jewish students violated and violence brought against them and levels of attack verbally against them that would also be considered harassment and incitement to violence. So we're now at a point, Tony, when a corner has been turned. And so now I commend Speaker Johnson. I commend the Republicans who went to Columbia University. They rightly told the president of the school to gain control back of the school, and they heard nothing positive in response from the president. So they rightly called for her resignation. When you have our President Biden giving out billions of dollars against what the Supreme Court ruled to students who are calling for the death of the United States and the death to Israel, now things have to stop. We need to reset, and we're seeing that our nation is getting out of control, just like in Germany in the 1930s, when academics and students on the college campuses in Germany were calling for death to the Jews. Unbelievably, in America in 2024, we're hearing calls for death to Jews and death to America and our own country. And we're bailing these students out with billions of dollars of our money. This is absurd to the point of absurdity, and it has to end.
So, Michelle, let me ask you this question. I mean, should we really be surprised with what's been happening through this long march through the institutions? You made reference to the 1960s, where the left has gone through, basically cleared the deck of any moral foundation. And then I don't think you can see this apart from the spiritual forces that are at play here, and we're talking about Israel and the Jewish people. So we've basically kicked God and an understanding of transcendent truth and morality out of our public institutions. And then comes, I would just say, a demonic presence through this anti-Semitism.
We've seen the demonic, Tony, since the genocide on October 7th. And that was beyond the pale for people watching. We haven't seen anything that barbaric in our lifetimes. And immediately, within 24 hours, we saw the demonic narrative take hold, where those who were the murderous terrorists perpetrators calling for killing Jews and killing Jews and raping Jews and torturing Jews. We saw them proclaim, hey, we're the victim here. We're the victim. As a matter of fact, we own their land and they all need to die. I mean, this is in the level of bizarre. So then you know when you see the upside down, that is clearly demonic. There's like a witchcraft source to all of this. So yes, it's terrible. But again, I think you stated it rightly at the beginning of your remarks, Tony, when you stated that we've seen this through the long march through the institutions. And so what we're seeing on the campus lawn and the campus green, this is what's taught every day in college campuses. This is what the professors have been pushing. This is what the students have been taking in. So from their perspective, they consider themselves morally righteous because they're putting themselves out subject to arrest because that's what they were taught to be true by their fraudulent professors. So what the students have been teaching, been taught across the United States of America explains why, in part, evangelical youth, in an article I read 2 days ago, it said that evangelical youth between the ages of 18 and 24 have dropped their support of Israel and the Jewish state by 50%. That didn't happen by accident. Their parents support Israel and love Israel and the Jewish people. What's happened is that the influence of TikTok, which there are 20 anti-Israel statements on TikTok for every pro-Israel statements, for 20 anti-Israel, there's one pro. They're getting it from TikTok, from the culture, from music, but also in the classroom. And that's where we have to have a distinct difference. Family Research Council is a distinct difference, putting forth a biblical worldview. The number one character in the Bible is God. The number two character is Israel. And the Bible teaches us unequivocally that the nations of the world need to bless Israel and the Jewish people and bless them and not curse them. And what we're seeing on American campuses is not only cursing Israel, but calling for the death of Jews and, unfortunately, tragically, right, the death of America as well.
There's about 30 seconds left, Michelle, but this week, I think fueling this as well, Nancy Pelosi, echoing the words of Chuck Schumer, gave an interview where she said Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should resign. That would not be tolerated for an ally. No. Calling upon an allied country in the middle of a war to resign, this is insane.
It's insane because Nancy Pelosi, Tony, is a spokeswoman for the Democrat Party. And unfortunately, she's agreeing with the president, the vice president, the secretary of state, and the leadership of the Democrat Party. They've shown their true colors. Their true colors are that they are now anti-Israel. They've, quite frankly, pulled the Team Israel jersey off their backs, and they've instead put on Team Iran, because Team Iran is Hamas. Team Iran is right. Hezbollah and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So that's Nancy Pelosi. She is part of the pro-Team Iran.
Michelle Bachmann, always great to see you. Thanks for taking time to join us today.
Thank you.
And folks, this is a serious issue. Spiritually speaking, politically speaking, from every angle. I want to encourage you to pray for and stand with Israel. We're doing a special event on May the 19th. To find out more, text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, stick around. On the other side of the break, we're going to be joined by the Kansas Attorney General to talk about debanking.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. And again, I would encourage you to pray for and stand with Israel, the Jewish people. This rise of anti-Semitism, as I've said before, is the canary in the coal mine. Do not think that this stops with the Jewish people. This is coming from the pits of hell, all right? We're going to talk more about that tomorrow on the program. Pastor Gary Hamrick of Cornerstone Chapel is going to join me. We're going to talk about the connection with the Jewish people, the church, Israel, the Bible. We're going to talk more about that. Well, allegations continue to emerge that Bank of America, the nation's second largest bank, discriminates against organizations for political and religious reasons. In addition to denying services to various conservative groups, the financial services giant canceled the accounts of Christian ministry groups, saying that a group that trains pastors is, quote, operating a business type we have chosen not to service, end quote. Well, in response, a coalition of attorneys general from 15 states have contacted Bank of America, requesting a report about its policies and its practices, as well as demanding that it update its terms of service to state that it does not discriminate against customers for their religious or political views. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach, who is leading this effort among the state attorneys general. General Kobach, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Great to be with you.
So, General, walk us through what the Bank of America has been doing and why this prompted you and 14 of your colleagues to take action.
Well, Bank of America has a history of either denying services when requested, banking services to organizations who have politically disfavored activities like gun companies or fossil fuel companies. And it also has a history of debanking customers that it already had. And there are some recent examples of this where Bank of America has taken away accounts, that is to say closed accounts, for Christian-based ministries. And this is in violation of not only federal law, but it violates many of our state laws. And of course, it's ironically, for Bank of America, highly un-American, and it appears that this bank is not for all of America and that conservatives are not welcome whether it be, you know, conservative religious views or conservative political views.
I mean, this is certainly appears to be just another initiative of the cancel culture, the left wanting to silence, drive out those entities they disagree with. Now, in most cases, when asked, the bank doesn't give a response. I mean, we actually encountered that ourselves with a bank. They don't give you an answer. They just give you this, you know, stated pablum that means nothing. How do you hold them accountable for this?
Well, it's a pattern or practice, right? And you're exactly right. When the bank takes away the account or debanks somebody or an organization, they don't say, oh, we've taken away these services because you you have Christian activity or we don't like your political views. They just take it away. And if anything, give a very generic statement like, well, you don't meet our requirements for service and, you know, something like that. And but we do. So when it happens in an individual instance, you might not know what's going on. But in the case of Bank of America, it's happened again and again and again. And there is a common thread here that the debanked individuals and entities are either Christian or conservative. And so this pattern or practice has not only gotten the attorneys general's attention, but also the attention of a House committee in Congress. And they've become somewhat notorious in this regard.
You know, you have given the Bank of America 30 days to respond to your letter that the 15 attorneys general sent. Do you expect to hear back from them? And if not, what action can you take?
Well, I really don't know if they're going to respond or not. I hope that they do, and I hope they take this seriously because, you know, it's hurting them to be known as a bank that does this to its customers, to discriminate against a whole class of customers all across the country. And it also would behoove them to respond, because if they don't, then the next step would be each of the states involved would look at Bank of America, look at the instances of debanking that occurred in their states, and then look at the state laws that apply. Each of us has a slightly different state Consumer Protection Act, but all of us have that. And many of our Consumer Protection Acts do apply to this type of debanking activity. In addition, there are federal laws that may or may not be enforced against Bank of America. And individual states also have laws that are specifically targeted at taking away services from companies and individuals because of their political viewpoints. So there are a host of potential legal liability traps or problems that the Bank of America could have if they don't do anything and ignore our letter.
So General Kobach, what should individuals or organizations that may find themselves being debanked, what should they do? What steps should they take?
I would say first step is to ask the bank for an explanation. They probably won't get one, but they should ask. And then second step, contact the Attorney General of your state and let them know that this has happened to you so that we can be aware of it. And that may, you know, tip the balance, or that may be the catalyst for that state attorney general taking action against that bank.
Attorney General Kobach, I want to thank you for taking the lead on this. This is a very, very important issue. It's just another manifestation of the cancel culture, but we've got to address these at every level. Grateful for your leadership there in Kansas and across the country in leading this.
Well, thank you for covering the story.
All right. Chris Kobach, Attorney General of Kansas. Here's what we need to understand. This is about silencing people they disagree with, and it is absolutely wrong. Now, you can't be silent about this. I know at first when this started to happen, people were kind of embarrassed by it, but you need to speak out. And this, another important aspect here is this underscores how important state elections are, how important it is. In fact, I would argue that the state elections in many ways are as important or maybe even more important than the federal elections. I mean, they're all important, okay? And who we elect as president is extremely important. But we see state attorneys general fighting each and every day against the Biden administration. It is so important. So pray, vote, stand. All right, be sure you're voting. All right, don't go away. On the other side of the break, more Washington Watch. Right.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Again, thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to pray for and stand with Israel, text the word Israel to 67742. Find out about our May 19th Pray For and Stand with Israel Sunday. That's Israel to 67742. All right, after failing twice the past couple of weeks, Democrats in the Arizona House of Representatives just hours ago passed a bill to repeal Arizona's law protecting life that the state Supreme Court really just affirmed earlier this month. Now, the final vote was 32-29, with three Republicans crossing over to join with the Democrats on this repeal effort. The legislation, as I understand now, heads to the Arizona Senate, where it could be heard as early as next week. Joining me now to discuss this is the Arizona House Speaker, Ben Thoma. He represents the 27th District of Arizona, and he has stood firm for the unborn there in Arizona. Speaker Thoma, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be with you.
So tell us about today's events in the Arizona House of Representatives. This has been 3 weeks running, and it finally happened today with three Republicans crossing over to join with the Democrats. A lot of national pressure on the Arizona House to do this?
There was a lot of pressure to do this, and quite frankly, as I said on my floor in my floor speeches multiple times on this, you know, I'm 100% pro-life. I believe that firmly. I believe that it is that we're all made in God's image, and as such, that all life should be protected. And so I did stand against what ended up happening today, and it's been now this is the third iteration of this. And finally, as you said, there were a couple of Republicans that sided with the Democrats on a procedural motion to force it to the floor. And then when the bill came up, it ended up being three Republicans that voted with the Democrats to repeal the original law, which they keep calling the territorial law, but really it was actually renewed and signed into law again in 1977, interestingly by a Democrat governor at that point. But what's really going on here in Arizona is we're trying to defeat a ballot initiative that effectively would allow abortion all the way through 9 months. I mean, technically, they say it's a 24-week abortion ban, but really there are so many exceptions, including the mental health of the mother, which is so broad you can drive a bus through it and would allow god-awful things like a partial birth abortion, which is just unconscionable. And we as Republicans absolutely need to stand together and make sure that whatever else happens, that does not pass in November.
So does the 15-week bill that was signed into law back in 2022, does that stay in effect, or is that repealed by this too?
No, that's a great question. That bill would stay in effect. So at this point, the law of the land, once this passes, if it passes, I should say, through the Senate, then presumably the governor would sign it because the Democrats have been calling for it. And once session is over, our process is that 90 days after session is over, our laws become effective. Then what it would default to would be the 15-week abortion law, which is what was decided by the Supreme Court, or just a little over 2 weeks ago.
So, Speaker, how do you make sure that the state stays pro-life this fall? We see this across the country, a lot of money being spent to confuse, to mislead on this issue. Are you concerned about that in Arizona?
Of course. Anybody that's concerned about life should be concerned about that here in Arizona. Again, what they're trying to do, the Planned Parenthood pushed initiative, is what they're calling a 24-week. But as I said before, it really would allow abortions in almost any circumstances, and including, you know, I'm stressed out that there's a pregnancy, and so therefore they would allow that to allow that abortion to happen all the way through the third trimester, and in theory all the way to a partial birth, which, as I said, is unconscionable. So I am concerned about that. Look, the truth of the matter is, after what's happened here and what is, let's assume for a moment, happens in the Senate, then the law of the land will be 15 weeks. And so we as Republicans need to get unified on this issue, and not just Republicans, anyone that's pro-life. And I know there are Democrats that are pro-life, or at least in theory there are, and I know a lot of independents here in Arizona are pro-life, and say, look, enough is enough. That their abortion initiative goes way too far. It prevents, and it does things like, for example, parents don't have a right to know that their underage children are getting an abortion, which is just, again, wrong on all kinds of levels. And so we need to stop that from happening. We need to put our disagreements behind us on what is reasonable and what isn't. We can all agree that what they're trying to do is unreasonable and immoral, and so therefore it needs to be stopped.
And would this, last question for you, Speaker Tillman, would this take it out of the hands of the legislature to be able to deal with this in the future?
And that's exactly the problem with some of these voter initiatives here in Arizona. Unfortunately, anything that's passed by the voters is protected, and it would require a three-quarters majority of the legislature to change it. And not only that, but it would also require it to further the cause. So in theory, if and when that were to pass, there's no way to undo it. And so that's another reason why we cannot allow it to happen. And even some of the prescriptions, for example, to get an abortion and under their law, you know, it doesn't even have to be a medical doctor that does it. It could be something as ridiculous as a dentist or a chiropractor, which, again, is another reason why the Democrats have been very clear about this. They want abortion on demand without restrictions. And we cannot allow that to happen.
Speaker Tillman, I want to thank you, commend you for standing firm for life, and we're going to continue to track this, and we'll be helping as much as we can in Arizona. All right, folks, stick with us. We're coming back with more Washington Watch as we take a look at the who on the other side of the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch again. To pray for and stand with Israel, to connect with thousands of others across the country, text the word Israel to 67742. May the 19th, mark your calendar, is Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. Churches, we're encouraging you to participate. Again, you can find out more information, pastors, how your church can be a part of this. Text Israel to 67742. Our word for today comes from Joshua 21. So the Lord gave to Israel all the land which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelled in it. The Lord gave them rest all around according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and not a man of all their enemies stood against them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hands. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. God did what he said he would do. You know what? You can count on the word of God. It will never fail. Now, if only Israel had continued in that posture of faith and obedience, this would have been their story from generation to generation. Likewise, if we'll continue in faith and obedience, we'll see God fulfill his promises, because he is a promise keeper. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. All right, alert here. I want you to be prepared. We're going to have some action items for you as we move into our final topic for today, because we're continuing to track the World Health Organization's attempt at a global power grab. And the efforts underway to do this through two different tracks. Now, right now, this week, even as we speak, the eighth meeting of the Working Group on Amendments to the International Health Regulations is taking place in Geneva, Switzerland. This is the final working group meeting before the 77th World Health Assembly next month. Now, with the World Health Assembly rapidly approaching and the Biden administration seemingly full speed ahead, embracing this global treaty, what can we do? What are the concerns, and what can we do? Joining me now to discuss this is Jim Roguski. He is a researcher and author who is now doing everything possible to expose the WHO's hidden agenda. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
And by the way, happy birthday. I understand today is your birthday.
It is. I'm 64 today, so thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I hope when you blow out those candles, your wish is that WHO will go away.
Well, those are my wishes and my prayers. And, you know, the good news is that they are having a difficult time. And in many ways, that's very simple and obvious. They missed their deadline, January 27th, which was required under Article 55 of the regulations, to propose a final package of targeted amendments in alignment with that, which said they had to do so 4 months before the meeting, which begins on May 27th. Well, you know, they don't seem to think that rules apply to them. Back in 2022, they pretended to adopt amendments to 5 articles, but they never bothered to vote. And those articles, according to their latest documents, are supposedly entering into force on May 31st, 2024. It's astonishing to me that the world is just ignoring that, because that really should be a scandal that would bring down Tedros and shine, you know, a light of shame on the WHO. They literally claimed to adopt amendments without ever having conducted a vote.
So let's, I want to get to the substance, but I want to continue this focus, because this could be the undoing. How do we make that happen?
Well, step number one is awareness. And, you know, the age of deception that's been prophesized, if we're not in it now, I couldn't imagine it being, you know, people being more confused at this point. So what has happened over the last couple of weeks and months is I've come across documents that were leaked and have presented information about, you know, what is going on with these negotiations. But in the last week, the official versions for the amendments and the official version for the quote-unquote treaty have actually been published by the WHO. And so people are now, you know, finally starting to pay attention to information that, quite frankly, is old news. And it's distracting people away from what is in the documents. Now, let me explain, because that might sound confusing. There were a lot of egregiously ridiculous things that go back a year and a half that the nations had proposed. And I will add to, you know, mis, dis, and mal information, one of the dangers we face is old information. So now that we have new information, what is in these documents for the amendments is not the things that people thought were in them a year and a half ago. Yeah, Those have been gone for quite some time.
So our listeners and viewers understand, this has been a moving target. They've been changing
exactly.
This thing and amending it. I mean, it seems like they meet all the time. So this thing has been, I mean, every time you think you're catching on to something, they kind of change it to shift it up. I think the process itself is designed to deceive.
And what is currently in the amendments that I feel is very concerning centers around the existing Article 31, which is about international travel. Now, that's what the IHR has really always been about. A lot of people have misrepresented what's going on. The local issues that you might be concerned about, the mask mandates, the vaccine mandates, employers requiring things, all these various things, those are local issues that people have to deal with locally. The amendments want to strengthen the ability of nations to, in their words, compel international travelers when you're traveling legitimately, you know, not crossing a border when you're not supposed to. But if you want to seek to travel and go to another country, the agreement amongst all of the nations enables them to compel international travelers who are outside their country to go through mandated medical exams, prophylaxis or prevention, and vaccines, in addition to isolation and quarantine. And the language that they want to add is that the isolation and quarantine can be as appropriate. Well, this really begs the question, Tony. This is the core question of all of this. Who has the authority, under what, you know, set of criteria, to determine that a person is a harm, you know, potential harm to other people when the tests are inaccurate and the jabs don't work. The concept behind these negotiations is that, oh, pandemics would be prevented if every nation could have enough investment capital to, you know, build laboratories and manufacturing plants to make more drugs and jabs and tests. And that core fundamental flaw in their thinking is not based on health. It's based on a transfer of wealth so that they can scaremonger more people and force the people in relatively poor nations that didn't get as many jabs the first time around to manufacture their own so that they can profit from this by scaring people and jabbing the people that they missed the first time around.
Right. So, and Jim, we know that those don't work. As you said, it's a flawed theory, and
absolutely,
it was flawed in practice. But there's an underlying issue here as well for those who would say, well, you know what, I don't travel internationally, so, you know, it's not going to bother me. I'm going to stay right here. This, at its heart, is torpedoing national sovereignty, is it not?
Well, the national sovereignty has been a red herring for quite some time. The confusion between the expression of national sovereignty in the fact that nations claim that the pathogens that they identify belong to their nation and they want to be paid when they hand over the genetic sequence, it's a battle between small oligarchs in poor nations who are trying to extract a pound of flesh from the pharmaceutical companies who made billions of dollars out of that national sovereign resource. That what we're dealing with here is countries like the United States, the European Union, standing in defense of the profits made by Big Pharma through, you know, defending their right to, you know, not be forthcoming and transparent, not suffer any liability for the harms that their products cause, battling not good versus evil, but evil versus evil, where the up-and-coming young oligarchs in smaller nations, they want a piece of that pie. No one is standing up for the people saying, wait a minute, you're trying to get wealthy nations to put a lot of money into building out the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex in poor nations, not to give that money or support to poor people in poor nations, but to give it to wealthy people in poor nations so that they can jab them the next time around.
So in many ways, this is a big scam.
Oh, and the PSYOP that's happening right now is twofold. I'll try to rattle them off very quickly. I know time is limited. With the treaty, which is essentially a business deal, they have so many problems in disagreement amongst the nations because they're all fighting over a multi-billion-dollar pie. They pretty much have failed to reach an agreement. Now, even worse than Nancy Pelosi, who said, oh, well, you know, just vote for it and you can read it later, they're going one better. They're saying, look, we haven't finished the document. Vote for it anyways on May 28th. That's when it's on their schedule. And they're opening it up for signatures for nations to become a party to it. And if you don't sign on to the unfinished agreement, then you won't get to participate in the ongoing negotiations because what they've said for a number of the segments is, well, you know, we're shooting for May 31st, 2026. They want nations to sign on to an unfinished document and then continue to move along with negotiations. If you don't sign on, you're out of the deal and you don't get to have a piece of the pie. And so it's like any other sales technique, you know, on Black Friday. You know, the sale ends on May 28th. You better sign up now.
Sounds like a timeshare. But
exactly.
when you end up having what it's going to cost you is it's going to cost you a lot. So how do we stop this? You know, it's, as you said, it's not completed. They're pushing it. They want to get it done. They want to lock the nations into this. The Biden administration appears to be fully on board. How can this, at this point, do you see a way that it could be derailed?
Well, I have every faith that it will be. And, you know, prayer is certainly a piece of that puzzle. By all means, pray for the outcome that you desire, which is for these negotiations to fall apart and for a vote never to even happen. Now, the U.S. government, the Department of Health and Human Services, has a listening session scheduled for Thursday, May 2nd. Any of your listeners can go to my website, the latest article on jamesroguski.substack.com, is you can sign up, you can send an RSVP email, and the information is all on that article, to get a speaking slot next Tuesday, or you can send in a written comment to the Office of Global Affairs. Now, the way the WHO and, quite frankly, the world operates is your silence is viewed as consent. So this listening session, we had one back on April 11th, and you can view what people had to say. And I would encourage everyone to watch the last speaker on that video. He did a fantastic job of bringing in, you know, the spiritual nature of this war that we are in. But everyone has the opportunity to speak your mind. It's like a wedding when they say, anyone who objects to this matrimony, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace. We're being deceived by a little bit of good news, and that good news is legitimate, even if it's old news that people are just now awakening to. But don't let that get you to where you're complacent. Now is the moment to work even harder. You're in the battle of, you know, of your life to crush this attempt to change how the world views what we're supposed to honor, which is our sacred right to be in control of our own body, make our own health decisions. And, you know, just because someone has a test or they want paperwork that says you've been injected with some substance, and if you don't meet those requirements, you are suddenly, you know, dangerous to your fellow man or woman. What they are failing to do, and this is the question of, you know, our time, who in the world has the authority to tell any other man or woman that they are a danger and it's appropriate for some authority to lock them up or force them to do something to their body? That is the question.
Well, who
behind
wants
all
that authority?
Exactly. And, you know, it's not a question. That's a statement, you know, exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Jim Roguski, I want to thank you for joining us and in continuing to keep us informed on this. Obviously, we're going to be focusing on this a lot in the next 30 days. So thanks so much for being with us. And again, happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
And folks, you can reply, as Jim was talking about. I've got a link for you if you want to text WHO to 67742. That's WHO, WHO, to 67742. I'll take you a link where you can provide a written comment to the Department of Health and Human Services. And so we do need to respond to this. We need to pray. Obviously, we need to, in this case, we can't vote, but we need to vote for men and women who will preserve our God-given rights. Now, I don't have time to go into it today, but I do believe this is a precursor to what we're going to see with these efforts for global governance. And this is the way they do it. As Jim was talking about, you know, scaring people to give up their freedoms and to bring about this global governance to somehow keep you safe and healthy. I can tell you the latter will not happen, but they will exercise power over you. Again, text WHO to 67742. All right, folks, we're out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.